الله
الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين.
نبدأ
اليوم بإذن الله تبارك وتعالى بشرح كتاب
عقيدة
أئمة الحديث للإمام أبي بكر
الإسماعيلي.
والإمام أبو بكر الإسماعيلي رحمه الله إمام عالم كبير حافظ من الحفاظ،
أثنى عليه
أئمة أهل السنة والجماعة، وهو أحد
أئمة أهل السنة والجماعة.
ولد رحمه الله تعالى السنة 77 بعد 200، وتوفي رحمه الله في السنة 71 و300.
وفائدة معرفة
وفاته هو أنه رحمه الله من القرون المتقدمة.
وفي هذا يقول شيخ الإسلام
ابن تيمية رحمه الله: وكلما كان العهد
أقرب إلى النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم
كلما كان أسلم.
والإمام رحمه الله
أبو بكر الإسماعيلي شافعي المذهب،
وهو أيضا رحمه الله له مصنفات كثيرة جدا،
من أهمها المستخرج على صحيح البخاري،
وهذا كتاب حتى الآن مع الأسف
لم يطبع فيما أظن،
وله كتاب معجم في الشيوخ وهو
مطبوع في مجلدين، وله كتاب أيضا
في العقيدة
هذا المطبوع. نعم.
الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. So begin today on the subject of the explanation of the Aqidah, the book by Imam Abu Bakr al-Ismaili, who is one of the great scholars of the Ahlul Sunnah, and himself is a scholar who has been praised highly by the other scholars of Ahlul Sunnah. He was born in the year 276 after the Hijrah and died in the year 371 after the Hijrah. And rather, he was born in the year 277 after the Hijrah and died in the year 371 after the Hijrah. And from the benefits of knowing the date of his death, is that we realize that he was one of the early generations, the scholars from the early generations. And as Sheikh al-Islam ibn Taymiyyah mentioned, that the earlier a person comes, the nearer he was to the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the more safe and sound that person will be. And this scholar, Abu Bakr al-Ismaili, rahimahullah, was Shafi'i in madhab. And he authored a number of works. From these works that he wrote was Al-Mustakhraj al-Sahihayn, a book of hadith connected to the ahadith of the two Sahihs of Bukhari and Muslim. And unfortunately, this book has not yet been printed. And another book that he wrote was Al-Mu'jam fi Shuyukh, which has been printed in two volumes. And this book concerning Aqidah, which we are not studying, inshaAllah.
والإمام أبو بكر الإسماعيلي رحمه الله
عقيدته سلفية،
ويظهر هذا من خلال ثلاثة أمور.
الأمر الأول
من خلال قراءة عقيدته التي كتبها، فإنها
عقيدة موافقة لعقيدة السلف الصالح رحمهم الله.
الأمر الثاني من خلال
تزكية علماء أهل السنة رحمهم الله
بعقيدته، كما أثنى على عقيدته الحافظ الذهبي رحمه الله،
وكذلك الحافظ بن عبد الهادي،
والحافظ بن رجب الحنبلي، وكذلك أيضا شيخ الإسلام بن تيمية. الأمر الثالث من خلال اعتماد أئمة أهل السنة والجماعة بعقيدته
ونقلهم عنها في
مواضع كثيرة من كتبهم، وربما أقدم من نقل عنه
وأخذ واقتبس من عقيدته
الإمام أبو عثمان الصابوني في كتاب عقيدة أهل السنة أصحاب الحديث.
كذلك أيضا نقل عن ابن قدامة رحمه الله في كتابه ذم التأويل، كذلك نقل عن شيخ الإسلام ابن تيمية رحمه الله في شرحه لحديث النزول وكذلك في الفتوى الحموية.
كذلك نقل عنه الحافظ الذهبي في كتابه العلو وهو كتاب مصنف في العقيدة في إثبات علو الله تبارك وتعالى، ونقل عنه شيئا من عقيدته أيضا في سير أعلام النبلاء في ترجمته وكذلك في تذكرة الحفاظ.
كذلك الحافظ ابن رجب الحنبلي
رحمه الله نقل عنه في جامع العلوم والحكم في كلامه عن الإيمان والفرق بينه وبين الإسلام، نقل أيضا عن أبي بكر الإسماعيلي في عقيدته. فاعتماد هؤلاء الأئمة رحمهم الله لهذه العقيدة يدل على أن هذه العقيدة عقيدة سلفية، عقيدة أهل السنة والجماعة.
This Imam, his عقيدة, his creed was a Salafi creed. And we know this from three angles. First of all, by reading the creed itself, we find that it is in agreement with what the pious predecessors of the Salaf were upon. Secondly, by the recommendation of the scholars of Ahl al-Sunnah, that they recommend this work of Aqidah by this scholar. And from these scholars who recommended this is Imam al-Zahabi, and Ibn Abdul Hadi, and Ibn Rajab al-Hanbali, and Shaykh al-Islam ibn Taymiyyah. All of them in their works recommend this work of Aqidah. And thirdly, we recognize this by the fact that the scholars depend upon this book and in fact quote from it in their later works. And from those who have quoted from it, perhaps the first of them, Abu Uthman al-Sabuni, in his work on the creed of the people of Hadith, he quoted from this book. And also Ibn Qudama, in his book Dhamm al-Ta'wil, he again quoted from this book. And Shaykh al-Islam ibn Taymiyyah quoted from this book in his own book Sharh Hadith al-Nuzul, and in al-Fatawa al-Hamawiyyah he quoted from here, and Imam al-Zahabi in his book Al-Ulu, which is a book of Aqidah, he again quotes from this book here, and also in Sirah Alam al-Nubala and Tazkirat al-Hufad, in the biography of this scholar, he quotes from this book again. Also Ibn Rajab Al-Hanbali, in his book Jami' al-Ulum wal-Hikam, when he discusses the difference between Iman and Islam, he again quotes from this book. So all of this shows that this is Aqidah, is the Aqidah of Ahl al-Sunnah wal-Jama'ah, and is correct Salafi Aqidah.
طيب المبحث الثاني، من هم أهل الحديث؟ لأن هذه العقيدة كما سماها المصنف بعقيدة أئمة الحديث، من هم أهل الحديث ومن هم أئمة الحديث؟ أهل الحديث هم كما فسره عبدان، فسر قول النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم بدأ الإسلام غريبا وسيعود غريبا كما بدأ فطوبى للغرباء. قال عبدان رحمه الله تعالى الغرباء هم أهل الحديث. كذلك فسر الإمام أحمد رحمه الله تعالى حديث الطائفة المنصورة لا تزال طائفة من أمتي ظاهرين على الحق المتفق على صحته، قال إن لم يكونوا أصحاب الحديث فلا أدري من هم. وأهل الحديث هم أهل السنة والجماعة كما أيضا سيرد في مقدمة هذا الكتاب وفي أول جملة من هذه العقيدة. فأهل الحديث هم أهل السنة والجماعة وهم الغرباء وهم الطائفة المنصورة وهم الفرقة الناجية. لماذا سموا بأهل الحديث؟ سموا بأهل الحديث لأنهم يقدمون الحديث على أهوائهم وآرائهم، فهم تبع للوحي. ولماذا خصوا بالحديث؟ لأن الحديث يفسر القرآن ويقيد مطلقه ويخصص عامه، ولذلك كما قال الإمام أحمد السنة قاضية على القرآن. ولهذا أيضا سموا بأهل الحديث لأمر آخر، وهو أنهم حفظوا حديث رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم، حفظوه بالرواية، فتناقلوا الحديث عن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم، تناقله الصحابة وأدوه إلى التابعين، وأداه التابعون إلى تابع التابعين، وهكذا حتى وصل إلينا. حفظوه إذن رواية، وحفظوه أيضا عن التحريف والتأويل، فنقلوه كما سمعوه من النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم وأدوه أيضا بفهم الصحابة لنا. فإذا هم كما جاء وصفهم في الحديث الذي يصححه بعض العلماء وإن كان مرسلا في وصفهم أنهم يذبون عن سنة النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم من تحريف الغالين وتأويل المبطلين وانتحال الغالين. فهؤلاء هم أهل الحديث رحمهم الله. وأهل الحديث يظن البعض أنهم فقط بدأوا من طبقة البخاري ممن صنف في الصحاح والسنن، أو من طبقة الإمام مالك الذي صنف في الموطأ، أو بعضهم يظن أنهم من طبقة ابن سيرين لما بدأ يتكلم في الرواة لأنه ظهرت البدعة فصاروا يتكلمون في الرواة جرحا وتعديلا حتى يحفظوا السنة عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم، وهذا قصور وخطأ. أهل الحديث هم من عهد النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم، من عهد الصحابة الذين حفظوا حديث الرسول صلى الله عليه وسلم وأداه الصحابة إلى التابعين وأداه التابعون إلى من بعدهم. فإذا أهل الحديث طبقة متصلة من عهد النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم إلى يومنا هذا لم تنقطع، وهذا الاتصال دليل على صحة هذه الطائفة، لأن الطائفة المبتدعة منقطعة مبتورة لا صلة لها إلى عهد النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم والصحابة. فمثلا الأشاعرة بدأوا مع أبي الحسن الأشعري، وإن كان الأصل أنهم يعني أخذوا عقيدتهم على الجهمية. الجهمية بدأوا مع الجهم بن صفوان، وإن كان الأصل أخذوا على الجهم بن درهم، لكن الجهم بن صفوان هو الذي أنشأ هذا المذهب الذي أظهر هذا المذهب. لكن أهل الحديث طائفة متصلة من زماننا هذا إلى زمان النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم والصحابة والتابعين. كيف؟ الصحابة أيضا كانوا يحفظون الحديث عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم، وكانوا يرحلون في سماعه أيضا. يقول جابر بن عبد الله رضي الله عنه: رحلت شهرا واحدا في سماع حديث واحد من النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم. كذلك من التابعين سعيد بن المسيب رحمه الله وهو من كبار التابعين يقول: إن كنت لأسير الأيام والليالي في سماع الحديث الواحد. فإذا أهل الحديث هم من الصحابة والتابعين وتابع التابعين إلى يومنا هذا، وليس كما يظن البعض أنه بدأ مع طبقة يحيى بن سعيد القطان وشعبة بن الحجاج وعبد الرحمن المهدي وأبو زرع الرازي وعلي بن المديني وأبو زرع الدمشقي وهؤلاء. لا، هم بدأوا من الصحابة إلى التابعين، فهم أهل الحديث، هم السلف، وهم أهل السنة والجماعة، وهم الفرقة الناجية، وهم الطائفة المنصورة، نعم، وهم الغرباء.
So the Imam called this book the Aqidah of the Scholars of Hadith. So we need to know initially who are the people of Hadith. This term, the people of Hadith, Ahlul Hadith, was explained by Abdan rahimullah when he was explaining the Hadith that Islam began as a stranger and will return as something strange. So Thuba, glad tidings, or a tree in paradise for the strangers. Explaining this, he said, these strangers are the people of Hadith. And as Imam Ahmad rahimullah said, in explanation of the Hadith, there will not cease to be a group from my Ummah manifest clearly upon the truth, the rest of the Hadith. He explained this group who will remain victorious upon the truth. Imam Ahmad said, and this Hadith is reported by Bukhari and Muslim, Imam Ahmad said in explanation of this Hadith, if this people is not the people of Hadith, then I do not know who they are. So these people are the one and the same people. They are the Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. They are the same sect. They are the aided group. They are the strangers. These are different names for one and the same group of people. And the fact that the Ahl Hadith, the people of Hadith, are the Ahl Sunnah. They are the people of the Sunnah, as will be seen from the start of this Aqidah itself, where it is straight away it is mentioned that these are the people of the Sunnah, Ahl Sunnah. So why are the people of Hadith, the Ahlul Hadith, why are they called the people of Hadith? They are called the people of Hadith because they give precedence to the Hadith. They give precedence to the Hadith over everything else, over their own desires, over personal opinions and views. Over all of that, they give precedence to the Hadith. And as Imam Ahmad said, again, that the Sunnah is decisive over the Qur'an. Meaning that the Qur'an, when there is anything left general or unexplained in the Qur'an, then the Sunnah comes and explains that and makes it clear. And if there is anything unrestricted in the Qur'an, needing to be restricted, then the Sunnah restricts it. So the Sunnah explains the Qur'an. And secondly, the people of Hadith are called that because they preserve the Hadith. Because they are the ones who preserve the Hadith. First of all, they preserved it by narrating it. So the companions narrated the Hadith of the Prophet ﷺ to the next generation, the Tabi'een. And then the Tabi'een, they narrated the same Hadith to the next generation, who narrated it to the next generation, who narrated it all the way through the time. Generation after generation, the people of Hadith preserved and narrated the Hadith. Secondly, they preserved the Hadith from distortions and misinterpretations. So the generation after generation, they preserved it as it was, word for word, and kept away distortions. And not only that, they preserved along with it the understanding of the companions to the Sunnah. They preserved that as well and passed that on as well. And as occurred in the Hadith, even if it is a Mursal Hadith, that they are described as being the righteous ones from every generation, preserving it from distortions. You'll find the Hadith in
رواه تكلم عليه بتوسع رواه ابن عدي وأيضا غيره ضمن المستحاكم ربما المستدرك يحمل هذا العلم من كل خلف عدوله ينفون عن تحريف الغالين وتأويل المبطلين. نعم.
They preserve it. This hadith will be carried from by the righteous ones from every generation. They repel from it the distortions of those people who innovate things into it or twist it, and preserve it from those who seek to demolish it. So some people think that the people of Hadith began as a group of people who began either in the time of Al-Bukhari or in the time of Imam Malik, or if not then maybe a little bit back in the time of Ibn Sirin. I think this is a group of people who began then. This is a mistake, this is an error. Rather, the people of Hadith began in the time of the Prophet ﷺ and the companions, because they were the first of the people of Hadith. The Prophet ﷺ narrated his Hadith, and the companions memorized it, and they passed it on generation to the next generation, and they preserved it and passed it on to the next generation, who continued to pass it on generation by generation, right till this time, now that we are in now, right till our day. So the people of Hadith are the initial ones who have been from then, from the time of the Prophet ﷺ, until now. Whereas all the other innovative groups began somewhere else. Later on, they began. They had their beginnings later. And they do not have connected link to the Prophet ﷺ, such as the Ash'aris. The Ash'aris began from the teachings of Imam Abu Hasan al-Ash'ari. They took part of his sayings, and they began from there. Even though we could find that their ideas came from the Jahmis, so then that takes them another stage to somebody else, the Jahmis, and then we could find that the Jahmis, they took their ideas from Al-Ja'd ibn Dirham. But these are not people who have the connected link back to the Prophet ﷺ. Whereas the companions, radiallahu anhum, they used to sit with the Prophet ﷺ, and they'd memorize the Hadith. And they would travel, not only would they sit, they would travel as well. Amongst themselves, they would travel far distances to hear the Hadith. As Jabir ibn Abdullah, radiallahu anhuma, said, I travelled 1 month to hear a single Hadith. And as Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib from the Tabi'in said, I used to travel days and nights in order to hear Hadith. So, the people of Hadith began then, began in the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. That was the beginning of the people of Hadith, not sometime later on. So these are the people who are the link from then until this day of ours, and it will continue. And these are the same people who are called the Salaf. The Salafis, they have a Sunnah wal Jama'ah, the aided group, the same sect, or the Ghuraba, the strangers. These are different names for one and the same people.
وفضائل أهل الحديث كثيرة جدا حتى صنف العلماء رحمهم الله في فضائل أهل الحديث منهم الخطيب البغدادي رحمه الله في كتابه المشهور المطبوع شرف أصحاب الحديث كذلك الإمام الطبري رحمه الله في كتابه صريح السنة كذلك بعض العلماء صنف في علاماتهم التي يعرفون بها كالحاكم رحمه الله صنف كتابا سماه بشعار أهل الحديث وهو مطبوع ومن المعاصرين أيضا من صنف في فضائل أهل الحديث الشيخ ربيع بن هادي المدخلي حفظه الله في كتابه المطبوع مآثر أهل الحديث الشاهد أن فضائلهم كثيرة جدا وأن الإنسان لابد أن يعرف فضل أهل الفضل حتى ينزلهم المنزلة التي يجب أن ننزلهم إياها كما قالت عائشة رضي الله عنها أمرنا أن ننزل الناس منازلهم رواه مسلم في مقدمة صحيحه
And the virtues and excellent qualities of the people of Hadith are very many and indeed whole books have been written about their virtues Al-Khatib, for example Al-Khatib al-Baghdadi wrote a book Sharaf Ashab al-Hadith, the excellence and nobility of the companions of Hadith. And Imam al-Tabari, he wrote a book, Sarih al-Sunnah, about the same, containing the same thing. And later on, Imam al-Hakim wrote a book about the signs by which the people of Hadith are to be known, called Shi'ab Ahl al-Hadith. And all of these books have been printed. And right up to this day now, Shaykh Rabi al-Madkhali, Hafidhullah, written again a book on the same topic, gathering the virtues of the people of Hadith. So indeed they have many virtues, and the person must realize and recognize these virtues and recognize the excellence of anyone who has excellence, that must be recognized and given credence to. As Aisha radiallahu anha said in a narration reported by Imam Muslim in the introduction of his Sahih, that we were ordered to recognize the we were ordered to give people their due station, to give people the station due to them.
يقول رحمه الله تعالى اعلم رحمنا الله وإياكم أن مذهب أهل الحديث أهل السنة والجماعة الإقرار بالله وملائكته وكتبه ورسله وقبول ما نطق به كتاب الله تعالى وصحت به الرواية عن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول اعلموا رحمنا الله وإياكم أن مذهب أهل الحديث أهل السنة والجماعة هذا في لغة العرب يقال إن أهل السنة والجماعة بدل عن أهل الحديث أن مذهب أهل الحديث أهل السنة والجماعة إذن كما ذكرنا في المقدمة أن أهل الحديث هم أهل السنة والجماعة إذن عرفنا أيضا أولا في المقدمة لماذا سمي أهل الحديث بهذا الاسم لكن لماذا سمي أهل السنة والجماعة بهذا الاسم بيّن ذلك شيخ الإسلام ابن تيمية رحمه الله تعالى في كتابه العقيدة الواسطية قال سموا بالجماعة والسنة أو بأهل السنة والجماعة بالجماعة من الاجتماع قال لاجتماعهم على العمل بسنة رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم نعم
And the author mentions the start of the book. Know, may Allah have mercy upon us and upon you, that the position of the people of Hadith, the Ahl al-Sunnah wal-Jama'ah, is. Believe in Allah and His angels and His books and His messengers. And acceptance of what is spoken of in the Book of Allah, the Most High, and what is authentically reported from Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So in the first sentence it is mentioned that this is the position of Ahlul Hadith, Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah. So in Arabic this is a language term called Badal, where one term is used and straight away another term is given afterwards, for them to, meaning that they are used interchangeably, meaning they are both used for the same thing. So both these terms, we see straight away, both these terms are interchangeable and used for the same people, the Ahlul Hadith and the Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah, which is the same people. So we have heard already in the introduction why the people of Hadith are called Ahlul Hadith, but why are the Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah called with this name, Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah? Shaykh al-Islam ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah explained in Al-Wasifiyyah that they are called the people of Sunnah and the Jama'ah because of their coming together and being united, ijtima' in acting and being in action upon the Sunnah, being united together in their action upon the Sunnah.
يقول في أول عقيدته الإقرار بالله وملائكته وكتبه ورسله. وهذه الفقرة مقتبسة أو مقتضبة من حديث جبريل عليه السلام الذي في الصحيحين لما أتى إلى النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم يسأله عن الإيمان، فقال الإيمان أن تؤمن بالله وملائكته وكتبه ورسله. وسنتحدث عن كل نوع من هذه الأنواع، عن الإيمان بالله والإيمان بالملائكة والإيمان بالكتب والإيمان بالرسل.
So in the first sentence it is mentioned that they affirm belief in Allah and His angels and His books and His messengers. So this initial sentence we can find it is taken from the famous hadith of Jibreel reported by Bukhari and Muslim, where Jibreel alayhi salam came and asked the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam about Iman and Islam and Ihsan, and the reply was given that Iman is to believe in Allah and His angels and His books and His messengers, and the hereafter, the last day, and in the Qadr, the good and the evil of it. So these points of belief we will discuss each one in detail.
الإيمان بالله يقتضي الإيمان بربوبيته والإيمان بألوهيته والإيمان بأسمائه وصفاته. الإيمان بالربوبية وهو ما يسمى بتوحيد الربوبية هو توحيد الله بأفعاله، أي أن الله عز وجل تفرد بأفعاله فلا يشاركه فيها أحد من خلقه. توحيد الله بأفعاله كالخلق والإحياء والإماتة ونحوها والملك، فالله عز وجل هو الخالق وهو المحيي وهو المميت وهو الرزاق. هذه أمثلة، جماع ذلك هو توحيد الله بأفعاله سبحانه وتعالى. أما توحيد الألوهية فهو توحيد الله بأفعال العباد، يعني نوحد الله في قصدنا وفي عباداتنا وفي طلبنا وفي طاعاتنا، فلا نصرف شيئا من العبادة إلى غير الله تبارك وتعالى، وصرفها إلى غير الله شرك، لأن هذه من حقوق الله عز وجل. توحيد الأسماء والصفات هو إفراد الله عز وجل بما ثبت له من أسماء وصفات سبحانه وتعالى. هذه القسمة ثلاثية، يعني توحيد الأسماء وتوحيد الربوبية وتوحيد الألوهية وتوحيد الأسماء والصفات. ما الدليل على هذه القسمة الثلاثية؟ الدليل هو الاستقراء، أي أننا استقرأنا ونظرنا في الكتاب والسنة فوجدنا أن التوحيد لا يخرج عن هذه القسمة الثلاثية. وكما أن العلماء قسموا الفقه إلى كتاب الطهارة والصلاة والجنائز والصيام والزكاة والحج إلى سائر أبواب الفقه إلى كتاب القضاء، ولم يبدع أحد من أهل العلم الفقهاء في تقسيمهم الفقه إلى هذا، لأنهم استقرأوا نصوص القرآن والسنة فوجدوا الفقه لا يخرج عن هذه الأبواب. لكننا نجد في الوقت المعاصر من يبدع شيخ الإسلام ابن تيمية لأنه قسم التوحيد إلى ثلاثة أقسام، كما فعل السقاف حسن السقاف. وهذا الكلام فيه مجازفة. المجازفة الأولى أن شيخ الإسلام ليس أول من تكلم في تقسيم التوحيد إلى ثلاثة أقسام، بل سبقه أئمة كبار متقدمون كالحافظ بن منده رحمه الله في كتاب التوحيد، فهذه مغالطة. الأمر الثاني أنه قد قام الدليل، دليل الاستقراء، على هذه القسمة. الأمر الثالث، هذا يدل على أن الرجل الذي قذف شيخ الإسلام بهذا مبتدع، لأن من علامات أهل البدع الوقيعة في أهل الأثر كما قال أبو حاتم الرازي رحمه الله تعالى. هذه القسمة الثلاثية في التوحيد هي القسمة المشهورة والمعروفة عند العلماء. هناك قسمة أخرى تجمع هذه القسمة، مشهورة عند شيخ الإسلام بن تيمية أيضا في كتابه التدمرية، وذكرها ابن أبي العز الحنفي رحمه الله في شرحه للطحاوية. قسم التوحيد إلى قسمين: توحيد معرفة وإثبات، توحيد قصد وطلب. توحيد المعرفة والإثبات هو توحيد الربوبية والأسماء والصفات. توحيد القصد والطلب هو توحيد الألوهية، فلا يقصد ولا يطلب إلا من الله فيما لا يقدر عليه إلا الله. وأنا أذكر النوعين حتى يعرف الإنسان هذه القسمة إذا قرأها في كتب أخرى متنوعة، وحتى يعرف جماع ذلك. أما توحيد الحاكمية الذي يكثر من الكلام من كثير من الناس الآن، فلا نعرف سلفا من الأئمة المتقدمين قسم التوحيد إلى أربعة أقسام، وإنما أول من بدأ الكلام عن هذا المودودي وسيد قطب. لكن لا بد أن يعرف أن هذا توحيد الحاكمية الذي قسمه إلى أربعة أقسام ليس عليه عمل السلف، لكن هذا توحيد الحاكمية يندرج تحت أي قسم من أقسام التوحيد؟ يندرج تحت قسم توحيد الربوبية، لأنه من توحيد الله بأفعاله. فالله عز وجل اختص بالحكم كما اختص بالخلق والملك والتدبير، كما يقول الله عز وجل: ألا له الخلق والأمر، وكما قال الله تبارك وتعالى: والله يحكم لا معقب لحكمه، وكما قال سبحانه وتعالى: ولا يشرك في حكمه أحدا. وباعتبار التقسيم الثاني الذي ذكرناه يكون توحيد الحاكمية الذي ذكره سيد قطب والمودودي داخل في إيش؟ في توحيد المعرفة والإثبات.
So with regard to the very first point, that Iman in Allah, the true faith in Allah, then this is comprehended in three points: Tawheed of Allah's Lordship, Tawheed of Rububiyyah, Tawheed of Uluhiyyah, the Tawheed of Worship, and Tawheed of Asma wa Sifat, the unification of Allah with regard to His names and His attributes. This is what we need to understand with regard to belief in Allah, Iman in Allah. So the first of these, Tawheed al-Rububiyyah, the Tawheed of Allah with regard to His Lordship, is to the singling out of Allah with regard to His actions, in the sense that Allah will do certain things in which nobody else has a share in these actions. They are particular to Him alone. So just as Allah is alone, He is the Creator. Alone, He is the one who is the Sovereign. He alone is the one who gives life. He alone is the one who gives death. And all of these are just are examples. These are, each of them are examples. And comprehensively, we say that Allah has certain actions which are particular to Him, and nobody else is a sharer in these. So this is the Tawheed of Allah's Lordship. Secondly, the Tawheed of Worship is to single out Allah with our actions, with the actions of the servants. We single Allah out with our actions, such that our intentions, our actions, our worship, all of that we make purely and sincerely for Allah alone. And we don't turn anything from this to any other than Allah. We make all of this purely for Allah. And turning any part of this worship to others besides Allah is indeed shirk, is turning worship away from Allah to others, is shirk. And then with regard to the third the third part of Tawheed, Tawheed of Asma wa Sifat, Tawheed of Allah's names and his attributes, which is to affirm whatever names and attributes Allah is deserving of, to affirm before him. So this is a division of Tawheed into three categories. What is the proof for this division into three categories? What is the proof for this? The proof for this is by careful study and consideration of the texts of the book and the sunnah. By carefully considering and studying the texts of the book and the sunnah, we find that Tawheed does not go beyond these three categories. And all of Tawheed is contained within these three aforesaid categories. It's all there. And it's the point that just as the scholars of fiqh, have divided the matters of fiqh into many chapters, for example, the chapter of purification, the chapter of prayer, and many other chapters in their books of fiqh, they divide it into many chapters. So nobody comes along and says, oh, the scholars of fiqh have done an innovation, they've divided fiqh into many chapters, chapter of purification, chapter of prayer, chapter of ghusl, this is an innovation. Nobody says this. So likewise, this is not an innovation to say that the Tawheed is of three categories. However, there is some foolish person today who says that Ibn Taymiyyah is an innovator because he has come along and he has divided Tawheed into three categories. And this person, Safar, this foolish person came along and he said that Ibn Taymiyyah is an innovator because of this reason. This is replied to from three angles. First of all, it is not correct because Ibn Taymiyyah was not the first one to divide the Tawheed into three categories. Rather, great scholars before him did the same, such as Ibn Manda in his Kitab al-Tawheed, likewise dividing Tawheed into three categories. Secondly, it is found by careful study of the texts of the Book of the Sunnah that this is something that is something correct, not something false. By looking at the books, you'll find that Tawheed does fall into these three categories, and it does not. There's no Tawheed outside these three categories. And thirdly, Safar himself is an innovator, and his innovation is clear by the fact that he attacks the scholars of the Sunnah. And Imam Abu Qasim mentions that one of the signs of the people of innovation is that they attack and accuse the people of the Sunnah. Then, after mentioning this categorization into three categories, we will also find sometimes that the scholars divide Tawheed into two categories. Such as Ibn Taymiyyah himself, sometimes he mentions Tawheed in two categories in the book at Tadmiriyyah. And Ibn Abd al-Izz, also who explained the Aqidah Tahawiyyah, he likewise sometimes explains Tawheed as being two categories. Tawheed of Ma'rifah wa Ithbat, and Tawheed of Qasd wa Talab. The first one of these being Tawheed of things we need to know and affirm. Things we need to know and things we need to affirm. So this covers from the initial one, it covers Tawheed al-Rububiyyah and Tawheed al-Asma al-Sifat. These are things which we have to know and things we have to affirm about Allah's names and attributes and about His Lordship. That is things which we need to know and affirm. And the second one is the Tawheed of things with regard to our desires and our actions and our intentions. This is Tawheed, same as Tawheed al-Rububiyyah. So it's the same thing, but it's just a different way of dividing the Tawheed.
Right.
With regard, so this is just in case that in some books we will come across this division saying that Tawheed is of two kinds. There is no contradiction between the two. With regard to Tawheed al-Hakimiyyah, some people nowadays say there's a fourth kind of Tawheed, Tawheed al-Hakimiyyah, Tawheed with regard to a legislation. Then, this is something for which we do not find any predecessors. There are no predecessors for this saying. Except some later comers, Al-Mawdudi and Sayyid Qutb, they came along and said that there is a fourth category of Tawheed, Tawheed al-Hakimiyyah, Tawheed with regard to judgment and legislation. But the truth is that this is something which falls within Tawheed al-Rububiyyah. The ruling and legislation and the power to legislate, This pertains to Allah, but it's part of His Lordship, Tawheed al-Rububiyyah, and it falls under that. And then the Shaykh mentioned the three ayahs, that indeed creation and order and ordering belongs to Allah, and there's nobody to change His ruling. So this is something that falls into Tawheed al-Rububiyyah, or in the second division of Tawheed, to Tawheed are those things which you need to know and affirm.
ثم قال رحمه الله الإقرار بالله وملائكته. الإيمان بالملائكة أحد أركان الإيمان، والإيمان بالملائكة يقتضي الإيمان بوجودهم حقيقة واعتقاد ذلك، خلافا للقاشاني من المعتزلة الذي يرى أن الملائكة مثال للخير وأن الشياطين مثال للشر، وهذا باطل. فإن المراد بالملائكة حقيقة أنهم ملائكة وأنهم موجودون. فإذا الإيمان بالملائكة يقتضي الإيمان أولا بوجودهم حقيقة، ثانيا يقتضي الإيمان بأن بالمادة التي خلقوا منها وأنهم خلقوا من نور، كما جاء في صحيح مسلم من حديث عائشة رضي الله عنها أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال: إن الله خلق آدم مما ذكر لكم، وخلق الملائكة من نور. الأمر الثالث الإيمان بصفة من علمنا صفته كجبريل عليه السلام، فقد أخبرنا النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم أنه رأى جبريل في صورته الحقيقية وله 600 جناح وقد سد الأفق، وكما قال الله عز وجل في سورة فاطر: الحمد لله فاطر السماوات والأرض جاعل الملائكة رسلا أولي أجنحة مثنى وثلاث ورباع يزيد في الخلق ما يشاء. فإذا هذه الأوصاف التي تذكر عن الملائكة في القرآن وفي السنة يجب أن نؤمن بها، كذلك يجب أن نؤمن بأسماء الملائكة الذين علمنا أسماءهم. وفي هذا يقول شيخنا العلامة محمد العثيمين حفظه الله في كتابه الشرح الممتع، يقول: لن يثبت من أسماء الملائكة إلا 5: جبريل وميكائيل وإسرافيل ومالك ورضوان. ثم ذكر الخلاف في منكر ونكير، قال: وقد ورد الأثر بذلك، يريد حفظه الله حديث أبي هريرة رضي الله عنه الذي رواه الترمذي وصححه ابن حبان أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال: إذا قبر الإنسان أو إذا قبر العبد أتاه ملكان أزرقان أحدهما منكر والآخر نكير. طبعا يضاف إلى ذلك الخلاف في هاروت وماروت، هل هما ملكان أو لا، في قوله تعالى: وما أنزل على الملكين ببابل هاروت وماروت. فإن قلنا إن هاروت وماروت ملكان فيكون الآن عندنا ثبت كم من أسماء الملائكة؟ 9: 5 ومنكر ونكير وهاروت وماروت. وإن لم نقل إنهما ملائكة فإذن يبقى ما ثبت من أسمائهم 7. طيب، اشتهر عند كثير من الناس في هذا الباب أن يسموا الملك الذي على اليمين الذي يكتب على اليمين الحسنات يسمونه برقيب، والذي على الشمال يسمونه بعتيد، وهذا خطأ فاحش في فهم القرآن. قوله تعالى: ما يلفظ من قول إلا لديه رقيب عتيد. رقيب عتيد صفتان لموصوف واحد، يعني كل من الملكين الذي عن اليمين أو عن الشمال رقيب عتيد، فهما صفتان لموصوف واحد. معنى رقيب أي مراقب حافظ، وعتيد أي حاضر لا يغيب، فهما صفتان لموصوف واحد. وكل ملك من الملكين الذي يكتب الحسنات أو السيئات فهو رقيب عتيد. أما ما ينقله البعض عن تسمية ملك الموت بعزرائيل فهذا كما قال الشنقيطي رحمه الله في أضواء البيان، قال: هذا من الإسرائيليات، أي أنه لم يثبت عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم أو لم يأتي في القرآن. كذلك الإيمان بالملائكة يقتضي الإيمان بوظيفة من علمنا وظيفته، كالملائكة التي تكتب الأعمال، والملك الذي ينفخ الروح في الجنين، والملك أيضا وجبريل عليه السلام الذي ينزل بالوحي، وميكائيل عليه السلام الذي ينزل بالمطر، ومالك خازن النار، وهكذا. فإذا ينبغي أن نؤمن أيضا بوظائف من علمنا وظيفته. هنا مسألة، هل إبليس من الملائكة أو ليس من الملائكة؟ قال بعض العلماء إن إبليس من الملائكة، واستدلوا بقوله تعالى وإذ قلنا للملائكة اسجدوا لآدم فسجدوا إلا إبليس، قالوا إلا إبليس استثناء، وهذا يدل على أن إبليس من الملائكة، وهذا خطأ. لماذا؟ لأن إبليس خلق من نار كما قال الله عز وجل عنه، قال أنا خير منه، يعني أنا خير من آدم، خلقتني من نار وخلقته من طين، والملائكة خلقت من نور، فإذا هناك فرق في المادة التي خلق منها، فهو ليس من جنس الملائكة. الأمر الثاني أن الملائكة لا يعصون الله مع أمر.
With God, the belief in angels, and belief in the angels is one of the pillars of Iman. It's something that we must have and affirm. One of the people who denied this, who twisted this, or rejected it, was Al-Qashari, one of the Mu'tazila, who said and came along and said that the angels are really just an example for that which is good. And devils is not really something true, it's something, an example for evil, just a mere example. Rather, this is false, rather you must have a correct belief, first of all, that the angels really exist. They actually and truly exist. Secondly, we must believe in what they are made of, as is described. They are made of light, they consist of light, that's what they're made from, rather. As occurs in the hadith of Aisha radiallahu anha, reported by a Muslim, the Prophet said, indeed Allah created Adam from that which has been mentioned to you, and he created the angels from light. So they are beings made from light. Thirdly, we must have belief in the form, in their form that is mentioned to us. For example, Jibreel alayhi salam, Prophet told us that he had 600 wings and he filled up the whole horizon. So you must believe in this. And then as occurs at the start of Surah Fatiha, with the meaning that all praises for Allah, the one who created initially the heaven, created the heavens and the earth, and created the angels who possessing wings in pairs and threes and fours, like that. So we believe in them as they are described in the form in which they are described to us. Fourthly, we believe in the names of those angels who have been named to us. Those who have been named in particular to us, we believe in them as such. And the Shaykh Ibn Taymiyyah, hafizahullah, in his book Al-Sharh al-Muntib, mentioned that there are five angels who have been mentioned to us only by name. First Jibreel, second Mikael, third Israfil,
Malik, what of one?
Fourthly, Malik, and fifthly, Ridwan. So these are mentioned in text to us, so we must believe in these individually. Then he mentioned also that the people differ about two others, Munkar and Nakir, and that there is indeed a report about this, reported by Tirmidhi and declared authentic by Ibn Hibban, the hadith, that when the person is placed in his grave, two angels come to him. One is Munkar and one is Nakir. So that those two are mentioned by name. And then there is a difference of opinion about two others, Harut and Marut. As I mentioned in the Surah Al-Baqarah, they mentioned there Harut and Marut. And there are different sayings whether they are angels or they are not angels. So if they are angels, then they are number 8 and number 9. If they are not, then the number of angels is who are mentioned to us by name are 7. With regard to what the people, the false idea that the people have, that there are two more angels, that the angel on your right, on a person's right hand side is called Raqib, and the angel on a person's left hand side is called Atid. This is false, and it is a false understanding. And they've taken this understanding from an ayah where it's mentioned about the angels watching being Raqib and Atid. So they've just taken, oh, these are two, as if these are two names. This is wrong. Rather, these are two descriptions of one and the same thing, of the angels. And what Raqib mentions is observing carefully, And atid, meaning not being absent, being always there, present. So these are descriptions of both the angels, all the angels watching over us. They're both watching carefully, and both are not absent. So this is not correct that these are two names of two angels. Then also, with regard to the angel of death, some people think that the angel of death is called Israel. Sheikh Ash-Shankiti, rahimahullah, mentions that this is a narration which there is no foundation for in the book and the sunnah. It's one of the narrations which originate from the people of the book only. Fifthly, we must affirm the duties of those angels which have been mentioned to us. Those angels who write down the deeds of the people. Those angels who breathe life into the fetus. The duty of Jibreel, alayhi salam, who descended with the revelation. The duty of Mikael, who descends with the rain. And the duty of Mari, guarding the hellfire. So we must believe in these particular details. Then the point comes that is Iblis, is he from the angels or is he not from the angels? Some scholars say that he was from the angels, and they quote the ayah where it was mentioned that when it was in Surah Al-Baqarah, when it was mentioned that the angels prostrate to Adam, and they all prostrated except for Iblis. So they say, therefore he must have been from the angels. But this is a mistake, this is wrong. And we can see that it's wrong from a couple of points. Firstly, that Iblis was created from fire. And it's stated clearly where Iblis refused to prostrate, and he said why he refused to prostrate. He said, I am better than him. You created me from fire, and you created him from earth. So he himself declared clearly that he was created from fire, whereas the angels were created from light, not from fire. Secondly, the angels do not disobey their Lord. The ayah was mentioned where it states the angels do not disobey their Lord. Whereas Iblis came along and obstinately rejected and was disobedient. And then the only problem that remains in some people's minds is the exception mentioned in the ayah, all the angels prostrated except for Iblis. There is a point of this is a point in the Arabic language where there is a group or a class of things and something is accepted from it. There is a language point that sometimes the thing which is accepted, all these ones did this, except that one. That which is accepted does not have to be from the same group in the Arabic language at all. It can be something separate. And this is the case here, it is something separate. And as is made clear in Surah Al-Kahf, where it again is mentioned that he refused to prostrate, and it is clearly stated, كَانَ مِنَ الْجِنِ. He was one of the jinn. So that clears up any misconception.
ثم قال رحمه الله وكتبه لا بد أن نؤمن بالكتب التي أنزلها الله عز وجل على رسله الذين أرسلهم لخلقه كما قال الله تبارك وتعالى وإذ أخذ الله ميثاق النبيين لما آتيتكم من كتاب فالنبيون والرسل الذين أرسلهم الله عز وجل أنزل معهم كتبا فلا بد أن نؤمن بهذا على سبيل الإجمال ولا بد أن نؤمن بأسماء هذه الكتب التي وردت في شريعتنا وأخبرنا الله عز وجل وأخبرنا الرسول صلى الله عليه وسلم عنها كما أخبرنا الله عز وجل عن داود عليه السلام أنه آتاه الزبور وآتينا داود زبورا وكما قال الله عز وجل عن موسى عليه السلام إنا أنزلنا التوراة فيها هدى ونور وهذه الكتب لابد أن نعرف أنها في زمانها هي التي تعبد الله عز وجل الناس في ذلك الزمان بها وأنها هدى ونور كما قال الله عز وجل فيها الهداية والنور إنا أنزلنا التوراة فيها هدى ونور لكن ينبغي أن يعلم أن هذه الكتب الآن حرفت وبدلت كما قال الله تبارك وتعالى يا أهل الكتاب قد جاءكم رسولنا يبين لكم كثيرا مما كنتم تخفون من الكتاب ويعفو عن كثير فإذا كانوا يخفون كثيرا مما أنزله الله عز وجل في كتبهم وحرفوا هذه الكتب لكن الكتاب الذي باقي الآن إلى يوم القيامة والكتاب الذي تعبد الله عز وجل الناس به منذ بعثة محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم إلى يوم القيامة هو القرآن وهو مهيمن على الكتب الأخرى كما قال الله عز وجل، فهو قاض عليها وناسخ لها. ومن هنا اختلف العلماء في الاحتجاج بشريعة من قبلنا، هل هي حجة أم لا، يعني شريعة موسى أو شريعة عيسى أو شريعة داود أو غيره من الأنبياء إذا ذكرت، أو شريعة يوسف عليه السلام، هل هي حجة أو لا؟ بعض العلماء يرى أنها ليست بحجة مطلقا، لقوله تعالى: لكل جعلنا منكم شرعة ومنهاجا، واللام في قوله لكل جعلنا منكم شرعة ومنهاجا أي للاختصاص، فكل أمة مختصة بإيش؟ بشرعتها ومنهاجها الذي أنزله الله إليهم. وآخرون من العلماء يقولون إن شريعة من قبلنا شريعة لنا ما لم تخالف شريعتنا، وهذا مذهب الإمام مالك رحمه الله، وهو اختيار الشنقيطي رحمه الله في أضواء البيان، وهو الصواب لقوله تعالى: يريد الله ليبين لكم ويهديكم سنن الذين من قبلكم، أي طريقة الذين من قبلكم. ولذلك لما كان الله عز وجل يقص علينا من قصص الأمم السابقة والأنبياء السابقين يقول: لقد كان في قصصهم عبرة. إذن ما كان حديث للتسلية وما كان خبر بدون أحكام، لكن ينبغي أن يعرف ما المراد بشريعة من قبلنا. هل نذهب إلى التوراة المحرفة والإنجيل المحرف وإلى الكتب المحرفة نقول هذه شريعة من قبلنا ونأخذ منها الأحكام ونأخذ منها القصص والإسرائيليات؟ لا، المراد بشريعة من قبلنا ما جاء في القرآن والسنة من أخبار عن هذه الشرائع، واضح؟ كما جاء في سورة يوسف عن يوسف عليه السلام، وكما جاء في خبر موسى وقومه، وهكذا هذه فيها بعض الأحكام، وليس هذا موضع البسط، الموضع أصول الفقه، لكن تعرضنا لهذا لأنها مبحث الكتب السابقة. نعم. على هذا الهراسي رحمه الله أن المراد بشريعة من قبلنا في هذا المبحث يعني ما جاء في القرآن والسنة من أخبار عن شريعة من قبلنا.
And in his books. And in his books. So he must believe in the revealed books. And the Sheikh mentioned the ayah where Allah took the covenant from those, the messengers with the books revealed to them. So firstly, we must believe generally in the books given to the prophets. The prophets came and revealed books were sent down to them. We must believe in that in general. Secondly, there's some books are mentioned in detail to us with their names. So in those books which are mentioned by name and stated, we must believe in particular, in those particular ones. Such as to Dawood alayhi salam, the Zabur was mentioned. So we must believe that Zabur was sent down to Dawood. And to Musa alayhi salam, the Torah was sent down. As was mentioned in the ayah, that Allah mentioned that he sent down the Torah to Musa, and it contained guidance and light. So everything that is mentioned by particularly in name, we must believe particularly by name in those. And these earlier books, they were meant that the people of their times should worship Allah based upon what was in them. Because as was mentioned here, they contain guidance and they contain light. So they were there for the people to worship Allah upon that basis. But later, these books were changed. The people changed and distorted these books. And then the Sheikh mentioned the ayah, where it's mentioned to the people of the book, يَا أَهْلَ الْكِتَابِ
قَدْ جَاءَكُمْ رَسُولُنَا يُبَيِّنُ لَكُمْ كَثِيرًا مِمَّا كُنْتُمْ تُخْفُونَ مِنَ الْكِتَابِ وَيَعْفُ عَنْ كَثِيرًا.
The ayah with the meaning that, O people of the book, there has come to you a messenger explaining to you much of that which you used to hide from the book. So these twist things and these to hide things from the book and cover it up. So what is the book which is remaining and that is here with us is the Qur'an. And it is upon the Qur'an, that is the basis upon that with which we are now ordered to worship Allah. And it is a book which abrogates the previous books. Then the point that arises here, scholars differ about this point, that the revealed laws for the previous peoples, are they revealed more for us as well? Whatever laws were set down to the earlier prophets, is that to be a revealed law which we are to follow as well? The scholars differ about that. Some say no, earlier revealed laws is no law for us at all, and this is not correct. That's finished now, we have our revealed law. And they quote the proof, this ayah which is mentioned, that for each of them there has been placed a revealed way and a way to follow. So they say, so for each nation a revealed way was sent down and established. So each one had their particular one, and we have our particular one, so we don't follow their ones at all. Other scholars say that rather we do follow the laws and rulings that we have remaining from the earlier nations. And from the scholars who say this is Imam Malik and Ash-Shanqiti rahimahullah. They say this with the condition, though, they say that we follow whatever is from the earlier laws with the condition that it does not contradict in any way our Sharia. It does not contradict our Sharia in any way.
يريد الله أن يبين لكم ويهديكم سنن الذين من قبلكم أي طريقة الذين من قبلكم.
And the proof from that was mentioned, the ayah that you just heard, where it was said that Allah wishes, after mentioning about the earlier peoples, Allah wishes to make clear to you the way of those before you. So Allah made clear to us their way. Why? So we should follow it. We should follow that. Not just, you know, there was a reason why it was made clear to us, that we could follow that. And then also in the ayah that was mentioned, that indeed in their narrations there is an admonition for you. They're not just mere stories about the earlier prophets, there's admonition to be gained from that for us. But then the question comes, what is the revealed way, the revealed religious way and law from before? Is it what we find, for example, we pick up a Bible now, or we pick up a Torah now, and that's it, we follow that? No, these are books which have been changed and distorted and preceded. Rather, what is from their revealed way is what occurs in the book and occurs in the sunnah from the earlier prophets. That is what is from their way, the revealed way of the earlier prophets. And these, now and again, certain rulings will be mentioned, as occurred, for example, in Surah Yusuf. Certain rulings are mentioned there. But this is not the place to go into that into detail. And Al-Haras mentioned that there is ijma, there is consensus upon this understanding. That the revealed way of the earlier prophets which we have to follow is what is contained in the book and the sunnah from them.
طبعا نتوقف الآن لقرب موعد الصلاة وإن شاء الله غدا نكمل يعني الدرس يومي حتى ننتهي من الكتاب يعني إن شاء الله في أسبوعين أو 10 أيام. اللي عنده سؤال الآن ما في بأس.
The Sheikh will just stop the point now and complete the point tomorrow inshallah. Hopefully inshallah we'll complete the whole book in maybe 10 days to 2 weeks inshallah. And if there's any questions now.
الدرس يومي يعني أقول لهم يومي بعد الله.
Every day. The درس إن شاء الله be every day after Maghrib.
ما عنده سؤال؟
Any question?
But the angel, you said that ملك الموت.
ملك الموت.
Do you believe that?
هذه صفة. صفة وليست اسم. قل يتوفاكم ملك الموت الذي وكل بكم. والموت أضيف إلى الملك الموت وأضيف ولو ترى يتوفى الذين كفروا الملائكة. أحيانا أضيف إلى ملك واحد وأحيانا أضيف إلى مجموعة من الملائكة وأحيانا يضاف الموت إلى الله. الله يتوفى الأنفس حين موتها والتي لم تمت في منامها. فكيف يجمع بين هذه الأمور أن الموت أضيف إلى ملك الموت وأضيف إلى الملائكة يعني مجموعة ملائكة وأضيف إلى الله عز وجل. أما إضافة الموت إلى ملك الموت فهذا الملك الذي يأتي لقبض الروح وينزعها من جسد الميت. وأما إضافتها إلى الملائكة فهذه الملائكة التي تصعد بها إلى السماء، فإن كانت روح مؤمن فتحت لها أبواب السماء، وإن كانت روح كافر رجعت إلى الأرض. وإضافتها إلى الله لأن الله عز وجل هو الذي أمر الملائكة وهو الخالق لهذا الفعل، فلا يكون شيء إلا بأمره. نعم.
With regard to the angel of death, malak al-maut, this is not a name, it's an attribute or a description. Angel of death, it's not a name itself. And sometimes you find in the text that it's mentioned the angel of death. In other texts it's mentioned the angels of death, in the plural. And sometimes it's mentioned that Allah causing the death. So how do we gather these texts and understand them together? We understand this by the fact that when it's mentioned the angel of death in the singular form, that this is the particular angel who comes and he takes the soul out of the person, that one particular angel. Then the angels of death is those angels who ascend through the heavens with the person's spirit. And if it's the believer, then the heavens are opened up for the spirit, and if it's the, an unbeliever, then the heavens are closed and he's sent back down to the earth. And then with regard to Allah causing the death, then it is Allah who orders these angels with this duty. Allah orders it, and it is Allah who creates this action.
Two questions about the books. Firstly, the book of Ibrahim alayhi salam from Surah Al-Ala, Inna Hadha Al-Sufid, or the Surah Ibrahim wa Musa. Can you explain that?
Suhuf Ibrahim wa Musa, يعني أن إبراهيم عليه السلام أوتي صحفا كما أوتي موسى عليه السلام صحف. وهذه الصحف يعني جاء في بعض الأحاديث وصف الصحف خصوصا التي عن موسى، لأنه كثر الكلام عن قصة موسى عليه السلام وتعددت قصة موسى في القرآن في أكثر من موضع، وكذلك جاءت في السنة كما جاء في الحديث الذي رواه الحاكم في المستدرك والإمام أحمد بإسناد صحيح من حديث أبي هريرة، النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال: ليس الخبر كالمعاينة، فإن موسى عليه السلام لما أخبر ما فعل قومه بالعجل، ما يعني ما صنع شيء يعني أخبر بهذا، فلما رأى ما صنع قومه بالعجل ألقى الألواح التي في يده، والألواح كان فيها صحف التوراة التي أنزلها الله عز وجل عليه، لكن هذه كان في حالة غضب، فإلقاء كلام الله عز وجل هذا لو كان على صفة الاعتقاد وكذا هذا استهزاء وكفر، لكن الشاهد أن هذه الصحف يعني الكلام عنها مجمل لأن شريعة من قبلنا، فلا يكون فيها تفصيل كثير في الغالب عن وصف هذه الصحف، لكن الوصف العام لها أنها هدى ونور في وقتها، وأنها مما تعبد الله عز وجل بها الخلق في ذلك الوقت.
the books of Ibrahim or the pages of Ibrahim, and the Shaykh mentioned that there are some about the books of Ibrahim and of Musa, they're mentioned in some narration in some hadith, and that generally the mention is left general, and there is more particular mention of the book sent out to Musa alayhi salam. But then with regard to that, the narration reported by al-Hakim in his Mustadrak, Imam Ahmad in his Sahih, from Abu Huraira radiallahu anhu, that being informed of something is not the same as directly seeing it. Because when Musa was informed about his people worshipping the idol, meaning he didn't do anything about that. When he was informed about it, he didn't directly do anything there and then. But when he saw them worshipping the idol, then he threw down the tablets containing the Torah, because out of his anger, what the people were doing, he threw down the tablets in a moment of anger. The Sheikh mentioned obviously that throwing the book of Allah, you know, if we did it in a way, out of despising what was in it or seeking to lower the status of it, then that would be an act of unbelief from us. But this is something different. Okay, somebody thinks that this was a moment of anger he threw down this when he saw what the people were doing. And just in general, these books, the earlier books, it was mentioned about them being guidance and light. In their particular time, they contained guidance and light for their people. But they are for the earlier people, so the mention is just less general. You don't need to know any more particular details.
Why the اختلاف هاروت
وماروت؟ لا الاختلاف لأنه النص القرآني يحكم أنه ما ملك. فدلالة الآية على الحكم ليست دلالة قطعية وإنما ظنية، ولذلك اختلف فيها العلماء. وليس هناك حديث صحيح يعني فاصل في الموضوع، إنما هي أخبار وقصص عن بني إسرائيل وغيرهم، فلذلك اختلف العلماء. لذلك الشيء القطعي في الغالب ما يتنازع فيه العلماء، لأن دلالته تدل على المدلول يعني ما تحتمل غيرها، أما الدلالة الظنية هي التي تختلف فيها.
With regard to the difference about Harut and Marut, are they from the angels or not from the angels, the reason for the difference about that is because it's not clearly and decisively textually stated that they are from the angels or they're not from the angels. It's something that is a matter of discussion or further research, and there's no clear hadith to say they are or they're not. the ayah could mean that they are from the angels, and could mean, you know, there's somebody beside the angels. Not clear. All that there is some narrations from the people of the book. There's not something clear whether they are angels or not.
Regarding what you're saying about Malik Kamal, I read that he's coming a few times a day. Is this a few times a day? Is it the only video?
Three times a day? What if you don't sleep three times? النوم وفاة، الله سماها وفاة، الله يتوفى الأنفس حين موتها، يعني يتوفى الأنفس حين نومها، الله يتوفى الأنفس حين موتها، والعفو حين موتها، والتي لم تمت في منامها، فيرسل التي قضى عليها الموت، فيمسك التي قضى عليها الموت ويرسل الأخرى، يعني الإنسان في حال النوم هو في وفاة، فإذا كتب الله عز وجل أنه من الأحياء يرسل له روحه ليستيقظ، وإذا أراد أن يجعله من الأموات قبضها وما أرسلها. نعم، أما أنه يأتي ثلاث مرات، أربع مرات، خمس مرات، هذا لا يعني فيه دليل، وإنما متى ما نام العبد كان في عداد الموتى بهذا الاعتبار، والله أعلم، وصلى الله وسلم على نبينا محمد.
It's mentioned with regard to the angel of death coming a certain number of three times a day, then there's no proof for this. Rather, the point is that Allah gives death to the soul when they sleep. And I was mentioned there that Allah, when the soul sleeps, Allah takes them in death. And then those who are to live, He sends them back again. And those who are to die, Allah keeps them back. And so whenever a person dies, then he is in a form of death. But with regard to the angel of death coming a certain number of times, there's no proof at all for this.
Make it like a sheep in the hereafter. When people of the paradise went already all to the paradise, and when the people of the hellfire all went to the hellfire, then Allah will say people of the paradise, all people of the paradise. Then Allah will say the people of hellfire, all people of hellfire. So all of them, they are looking. Then Allah brings the death like a sheep and the slaughter. So why? Because the people of the hill, they will get more upset because خلاص, they know that there will be no death. The death is killed. So that their pain and their suffering will be forever. And the people of the paradise, they will be more happy because they know خلاص, there is no death. This life is forever.
The other question concerning when Malak al-Maut comes to the head of the dying believer before he takes the ruh. Did you come in a good
Quran?
No. What appeals of the angel come to the believer, the kafir?
No. This is after when he's in the grave.
In the grave?
Before they come to him and he sees them, if he's a good Muslim, he feels happy because of the na'im after this. He's kafir, he feels bad and because they start beating him and hating him. And he doesn't, people doesn't feel this. They beat his face and his back. But people, they don't see. When they want to take his soul, the kafir soul. So he feels bad and it looks bad.
This is in dunya, before the grave.
Yes, this is in dunya.
Dunya?
Yes.
Jazakallah.
Barak ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Qala al-musannif rahimahullah ta'ala fi aqidatihi ba'da an tahaddathna الإيمان بالله والملائكة والكتب، بقي أن نتحدث عن الإيمان برسله، أي برسل الله تبارك وتعالى. وهذا كله كما جاء في حديث جبريل عليه السلام لما سأل النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم عن الإيمان والإسلام والإحسان كما في الصحيحين. الإيمان بالرسل يقتضي أن نؤمن أولا بأن الرسل بشر، وأن الفرق ما بينهم وبين سائر البشر هو أنه يوحى إليهم، كما قال الله تبارك وتعالى مخاطبا نبيه أن يخبر الناس بقوله قل إنما أنا بشر مثلكم يوحى إلي أنما إلهكم إله واحد. فهذا هو الفرق ما بين الرسل والبشر، أنهم يوحى إليهم، فهم بشر كسائر الناس. من مقتضيات الإيمان بالرسل أم نؤمن بالسبب الذي من أجله بعث الله عز وجل الرسل إلى خلقه؟ فإن الله تبارك وتعالى بعثهم إلى الخلق إعذارا وإنذارا حتى لا يكون لأحد من خلقه حجة على الله يوم القيامة، كما قال الله تبارك وتعالى: رسلا مبشرين ومنذرين لئلا يكون للناس على الله حجة بعد الرسل. وقد اعتبر الله عز وجل قول المعاندين في أن الله ما أرسل رسلا أو ما أنزل كتبا بأن ذلك قادح في عدله وفي ألوهيته سبحانه وتعالى، كما قال الله تبارك وتعالى لما في قوله تعالى: قل فمن جاء أقول الشيطان الرجيم أن تقولوا ما جاءنا من بشير ولا نذير فقد جاءكم بشير ونذير. فالشاهد أيها الأخوة أن الله عز وجل أرسل الرسل إعذارا للخلق، رسلا مبشرين ومنذرين لئلا يكون للناس على الله حجة بعد الرسل. أيضا من مقتضيات الإيمان بالرسل أن نؤمن باسم من علمنا اسمه على وجه التفصيل، كموسى وعيسى ونبينا محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم، وأن من لم نعرف أو لم يرد الخبر باسمه فنؤمن بهم على سبيل الإجمال أن الله عز وجل أرسلهم إلى أقوامهم، كما قال الله عز وجل: رسلا قد قصصناهم عليك ورسلا لم نقصصهم عليك. كذلك ينبغي أن نعلم أن آدم عليه السلام هو أول الأنبياء، وأن نبينا محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم هو آخر الرسل. وينبغي أن نعرف أيضا أنه لا نبي بعد رسولنا صلى الله عليه وسلم. ما كان محمد أبا أحد من رجالكم ولكن رسول الله وخاتم النبيين. خاتم النبيين أي أنه لا نبي بعده، فبه ختمت النبوة. فكل من ادعى أنه نبي بعد رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم فهو كاذب وكافر. كذلك ينبغي أن نعلم أن الله عز وجل قد فضل بين الرسل، كما قال الله تبارك وتعالى: تلك الرسل قد فضلنا بعضهم على بعض. وأن هذا لا يناقض قوله تعالى: لا نفرق بين أحد من رسله. فالمعنى أي لا نفرق في الإيمان بالرسل جميعا، فينبغي أن نؤمن بالرسل جميعا. والإيمان ببعض الرسل دون بعض هذا كفر بالله عز وجل، كما قال الله تبارك وتعالى: إن الذين يكفرون بالله ورسله ويريدون أن يفرقوا بين الله ورسله ويقولون نؤمن ببعض ونكفر ببعض ويريدون أن يتخذوا بين ذلك سبيلا، هذا هو الكفر. أما التفضيل الرسل بعد بعضهم على بعض فهذا ثابت، كما قال النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم: أنا سيد ولد آدم ولا فخر، أي أنه خير بني آدم على الإطلاق. وكما قال الله عز وجل: تلك الرسل فضلنا بعضهم على بعض. والرسل منهم أولو العزم وهم خمسة رسل، كما جاء ذكرهم في سورة الأحزاب: وإذا أخذنا من النبيين ميثاقهم ومنك، أي ومنك يا محمد، وإذا أخذنا من النبيين ميثاقهم ومنك ومن نوح ومنك ومن نوح وإبراهيم وموسى وعيسى بن مريم. هؤلاء هم أولو العزم من الرسل الخمسة: إبراهيم نبينا محمد ونوح وإبراهيم وموسى وعيسى عليهم السلام. وكان نبينا صلى الله عليه وسلم يؤمر باتباعه أو بالاقتداء في محاسن أمورهم، كما قال الله عز وجل: فاصبر كما صبر أولو العزم من الرسل. ويجب أن نعتقد أيضا في الرسل أنهم معصومون عن الخطأ فيما يبلغونه عن الله عز وجل. كذلك ينبغي أن نعتقد أيضا أن الرسل ليس لهم شيء من خصائص الربوبية لأنهم بشر. ولذلك يقول الله تبارك وتعالى عن إبراهيم عليه السلام: وإذا مرضت فهو يشفين، فيعتريه ما يعتري البشر من المرض. ويقول الله تبارك وتعالى عن نبينا محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم مخاطبا قومه: قل إني لا أملك لكم نفعا ولا ضرا، فلا أحد من الرسل ينفع أو يضر، ومن اعتقد ذلك فقد كفر. فلا يجوز لأحد أن يجعل الرسل بمنزلة الرب، وأن يصرف لهم شيئا من حقوق الربوبية فيسألهم جلب المنفعة ودفع المضرة، فهذا لا يقدر عليه إلا الله عز وجل.
بسم الله، الحمد لله، والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. بعد، yesterday we studied the beginning of the book, the creed and the scholars of hadith, and today we will continue. We reached the point of belief in his messengers. We had yesterday the belief in Allah, and belief in his angels, and belief in his books, and the point we have reached now is belief in Allah's messengers, which is also taken from the famous hadith of Jibreel, reported by Bukhari and Muslim, where he asked him about Iman and Islam and Ihsan. So from that, as he mentioned, that from Iman was to believe in Allah's messengers. So the belief in Allah's messengers, the first point we need to understand is that the messengers were humans, they were men. And the only difference between these men and the rest of men was that revelation was sent to the messengers, where they were still men. And the ayah was mentioned from Surah Al-Kahf, where it was the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was told to say, with the meaning that, say, I am a man like you, and it has been revealed to me that your God is a single God. And with respect to that, that is the difference between them and the rest of men, that the revelation was sent to them. But with regard to the other things, they are men like the rest of mankind. The second point we need to know is the reason for which they were sent. And they were sent to cut off the excuse of the people, and sent as warners to the people. And in the ayah was mentioned there, where it is said that they were sent in order that there should be no plea left for the people. There should be no excuse and no plea left for any of the people. That they were sent as messengers, bringers of good tidings and warnings, so that there should not remain any excuse for the people with Allah. So this excuse is removed, because if the messengers were not sent, the people would have may have an excuse on the Day of Judgment and say that nobody came and warned us. Whatever we did because no warner came to us. So then the excuse was cut off, and the ayah was mentioned where it was said, so that no one should come and say, no warner came to us. Rather, bringers of good tidings and warnings came to you. So they were sent. And then the third point is that we believe in the messengers in general, that Allah had messengers. Some of them we don't know. Many of them we don't know their names, so we believe in general that they are messengers from Allah. Others were mentioned in particular by name, so we must believe in them particularly and by name. And then the ayah was mentioned with the meaning that there are some messengers whom Allah has told their stories to us, and other messengers whom Allah has not related their stories to us. And we need to know that the first of all the prophets was Adam alayhi salam, and the last of all of them was Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And then the ayah was quoted that Muhammad is not the father of any of you men, but rather he is the last of the prophets. The Khatim of the prophets, the last of all the prophets. So therefore the ayah clearly tells us that he was the last of all the prophets, so nobody else can come after him. And anybody who comes after him claiming to be a messenger is, first of all, he is a liar, and secondly, he is an unbeliever. The next point, we need to know that Allah has given excellence to to some of the prophets over others. They're differing in degrees of excellence. And then the ayah was mentioned, where it was said that there are that those are the messengers. We gave excellence to some of them over others. They're different in degrees of excellence. But there's no way any contradiction between this ayah and between the other ayah where it's said that with the meaning that we do not cause distinction between the messengers. The two ayahs do not contradict. Because the second ayah, all the second ayah means is that we do not give any distinction, meaning we believe in some and we disbelieve in others. Rather, we believe in all of them. So that is the distinction that is meant that with regard to belief. Rather, we believe in all of them and don't disbelieve in any of them. As was shown by the next ayah that was mentioned, where it said that indeed those who disbelieve in Allah and His messengers, they want to cause distinction between Allah and His messengers. They want to cause difference between Allah and His messengers, and believing in some and disbelieving in others. And excellence of the messengers is clearly shown by various texts, amongst them the saying of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, "I am the most noble of the sons of Adam," and that is not boasting. Then the next point is that there were certain messengers who were the most resolute of the messengers, the Ulul Azm, and they are mentioned in Surah Al-Ahzab, where it was mentioned that Allah took the covenant from the prophets and from you, Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and from Nuh and Ibrahim and Musa and Isa. So these five who were mentioned, Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and Nuh and Ibrahim and Musa and Isa, are known as Ulul Azm, the five most resolute of the messengers. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was commanded to follow their example. So it was mentioned, and it was mentioned in the next ayah, to have patience, or patiently persevere, just as the resolute messengers, the Ulul Azm, just as they had patience. The next point is that the messengers are free from any error. We need to believe that the messengers are free from any error with regard to what they transmit from their Lord. With regard to the revelation which they transmit from their Lord to the people, they are free from making any error in that at all. And the next point is that they have no share of divinity or no share of lordship. No share of Allah's rububiyyah. They have no share of that whatsoever. As was mentioned about Ibrahim alayhi salam in the ayah, where he said, When I become ill, my Lord cures me. When I become ill, my Lord cures me. And that was Ibrahim the messenger saying this. And that was quoted from him in the Quran. When I become ill, my Lord cures me. And it was mentioned in the Quran concerning Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he was told to say to the people, "Say, I do not possess any benefit for you, nor any harm for you." He is not the possessor, he is not in his hands. The harm will benefit the people. Rather, this pertains to the rights of Allah alone. So anybody who claims anything different to this, that any of the messengers did possess anything of lordship and control over the affairs, then that person has done unbelief, has done kufr.
ثم قال رحمه الله
وقبول ما نطق به كتاب الله تعالى وصحت به الرواية عن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم لا معدل عن ما ورد به ولا سبيل إلى ربه كانوا مأمورين باتباع الكتاب والسنة. المسلم إذا قرر بالإيمان بالله وشهد الشهادتين وشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأن محمد رسول الله فإن من مقتضيات هذه الشهادة أن يؤمن بما جاء في الكتاب والسنة بما أنزله الله تعالى سبحانه وتعالى في كتابه وما أخبرنا به نبينا صلى الله عليه وسلم. وهذا الإيمان الذي أمرنا الله عز وجل به، فإن حقيقة الإيمان قبول ما جاء به النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم، ورده كفر بالله عز وجل إن كان الرد عن جح وإنكار. يقول الله تبارك وتعالى: اتبعوا ما أنزل إليكم من ربكم ولا تتبعوا من دونه أولياء. اتبعوا ما أنزل إليكم من ربكم، أي ما أنزله الله عز وجل إليكم، واتباع سوى ذلك هو جعله وليا، ولا تتبعوا من دونه أولياء. وهذا الاتباع لله ورسوله هو مقتضى الطاعة لله ورسوله. يا أيها الذين آمنوا أطيعوا الله وأطيعوا الرسول وأولي الأمر منكم. ويقول الله تبارك وتعالى: وأن هذا صراطي مستقيما فاتبعوه. واضح الأمر بالاتباع. ولا تتبعوا السبل فتفرق بكم عن سبيله، أي أن الله أنزل كتابه حتى يعتلف ويتفق الناس عليه، لأن هذا صراط مستقيم، وأن هذا صراطي مستقيما فاتبعوه. ولا تتبعوا السبل، السبل قال ابن عباس رضي الله عنهما الضلالات، وقال مجاهد رحمه الله السبل الشهوات والشبهات، والقولان متفقان. فالضلالات اسم عام للشبهات والشهوات، فالضلالة إما أن تكون شهوة أو شبهة، فهذا من اختلاف التنوع عند العلماء. والرد يكون على نوعين، يقول ابن السبيل لرده: الرد على نوعين، رد إنكار وجح كما يفعله الكفار والعلمانيون فهذا كفر نخرج من الملة، والرد النوع الآخر رد أهل البدع، وهذا يكون